And they all felt that that was a great thing. They all noticed that when they were in their groups working, they all felt, I would say, important. They all felt like they were an integral part of creating a solution to a problem.
Leadership is actually an activity, and it's something that anyone can do anytime, anywhere.
Hey, 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 how is everyone? Welcome. Welcome back. We are here. This is The Network, our podcast on profession-based learning and the CAPS model. I am Corey Moen. I'm the executive director of the Blue Valley Center for Advanced Professional Studies and our CAPS network, which I keep saying is a national network, but it's really an international network now, going global and working to continue to spread this amazing learning model for as many students as we possibly can. And we are at the beginning of the 2020-2021 school year. And boy, has it been an interesting ride. And I'm sitting here with actually two guests today. One is someone that we know very well inside of these walls, and that's Dr. Tammy Fry, who is our teacher education instructor here. And we also have with us one of our strategic partners, DJ Wetter, who is with the Kansas Leadership Center and Your Leadership Edge, which actually does work beyond the state of Kansas as well. But he sits here in the Kansas City area in our region and has been a great support to us. And so we think a lot in on this model about what is leadership? What does leadership mean? And in a model where we go where students lead, we actually have lead kind of in the three words that we say when we talk about the vision of CAPS, it's really important for us to define what that means. And so I am just really excited to have DJ and Tammy with us today. Welcome to you both.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Exciting to be here. Thanks,
yeah.
Corey.
Yeah. We are sitting in a very socially distanced, COVID-safe environment, almost a triangle of sorts. We have four of us here in the room, and but we're spread out in our presentation space, actually. So this is a nice setup. We have our producer, Elisa Morse, with us, who's always doing great work for us and teaching away here in finishing our second week of school. So DJ, I might start with you and
sure.
Just get the conversation started. So this idea of the Leadership Center, tell us a little bit more about what leadership means, what this organization is, and how it relates to things that our audience might care about, you know, teachers and administrators and school systems.
Absolutely. Yeah. Corey, first of all, thanks for having me. It's exciting to be here. I got my start in a building really close to here, right across the street that many people
That's
won't.
Right.
We can't visualize it, but for something that used to be called BVTV. So it's fun to be back in front of a microphone and with you all. So thanks for having me. The idea of the Kansas Leadership Center really starts with the idea of what it means for a community to be healthy, which is an interesting place to start when it comes to leadership. Often when we define leadership or talk about leadership, it usually defaults into a conversation about role, what role someone has, how persuasive they are, who follows them. About 13 years ago, the Kansas Health Foundation, which is centered down in Wichita, Kansas, had this idea, though, that if you're going to have healthy communities, you probably need healthy leadership. And they did something we don't recommend anybody do. They threw money at the problem, right? They said, what if we took some money, started something called the Kansas Leadership Center? We don't know what that looks like, by the way, but we'll start it. Here's some money. They hired one guy, Ed O'Malley. He's still our CEO today.
Yeah.
And they said, figure out what this is. And he went on a listening initiative with the staff that he hired 13 years ago. And that framework that was created over the next couple of years has now been the basis to train more than 12,000 Kansans and a few thousand more people around the United States and the world. We've been present in six continents at this point. So we're looking for Antarctica to come
through. I was going
to
say, you got some penguins you can...
Well,
sign up for some programming.
I'd love to get that rounded out, but I don't, you know, we'll see when that happens. But really what this framework is based in, Corey, and it'll bring it back to your education audience, is the idea that leadership is actually an activity. And it's something that anyone can do anytime, anywhere. We can practice it. We can get better at it. And that we can choose how to show up in different situations and help other people make progress. So leadership starts with us. It starts with the individual, but it's an activity. It must engage others.
Yeah.
And what I think is so beautiful about the partnership with Blue Valley Caps and with other education partners is our mission field is inside the state of Kansas. We're the Kansas Leadership Center, but there are no boundaries to this work. So much like the Caps Network says, education improvements around the world are better for everybody. We believe right. the same thing. And there's no boundaries to this leadership stuff. I was talking to a district recently, and the guy I was working with said, half of our staff is not in a classroom, right? Half of the staff in this district does other jobs, not in the classroom. And mm-hmm. we often talk about continuing ed for that staff, but not for others. And so this is a framework that believes students, teachers, administrators, people who work in janitorial services all have the ability to practice leadership. And if they do so, all will be better off, make more progress, and learn at a higher rate.
That's fantastic. You know, as I think about that, what you just said, if you look at the numbers, you know, for, and we're just talking about this district here with Blue Valley, almost 23,000 students, mm-hmm. the staff number is a fraction of that, right?
That's right.
I mean, if you look at the organization in terms of number of staff, you're more at like 3,000 to 4,000, somewhere in there. And so six times as many of the stakeholders inside the system are the students or the customers, you would say. So you kind of miss the boat if you don't address those participants and that really important customer in the model.
Oh, absolutely. And we spend a lot of time deconstructing the distinction between leadership and authority in our programs in Wichita and our programs in Kansas City. And we can get more into that if that's interesting at all. But what we find when we work with students is we don't have to deconstruct that. They're already interacting with systems in some places that have told them, wait your turn. And we're providing a model that says, No, intervene now, not do it with purpose. And actually the system needs you and requires you if it's going to make progress on our deepest daunting challenges.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was growing up as a professional, one of my first few opportunities in the workforce, it always seemed to me that when leadership was mentioned, inevitably right behind it was the noun leader.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was individual focused, that there were leaders and there were people who weren't leaders. Sometimes you would hear leaders and followers. Are you a leader? Are you a follower? And my sense is that out in the community, the broader kind of global community, there still is this sense that there are leaders and that there are certain things you do to be a great leader. And this model is quite a bit different in that I always see it more as an action orientation or a verb. Leadership is a verb as opposed to leader being a noun. And it kind of changes how we think about it, right?
One of my favorite experiments to run with the group is say, don't use the word leader. Set a time, set 24 hours, take a week. And when you're in meetings, when someone says leader, have them define what they mean by that. Because usually, to your point, Corey, they mean teacher. They mean executive team member, someone who's convening a meeting, someone who's been appointed to a position. Those are all authority roles. And there's nothing wrong with authority roles. We need authority roles. Good authority provides protection, direction, and order. But there are challenges in this world that we cannot authorize people to fix. Poverty, right? Equal and equitable access to educational opportunities, things like that. Nobody can just say, you know, Dr. Fry, take care of that for us, right? Like, fix that for us.
She may be able to figure it out.
Well, truth be, absolutely. But what we know is, culture within an organization, you cannot mandate that culture within an organization get better. It's going to involve stakeholders. And so when you tease apart, and you don't actually use the word leader anymore because leadership is an activity, you tease apart role from what it means to practice leadership, what we found is you can make more progress on your biggest challenges. And the reason for that is all of a sudden more people are involved in the work.
Right.
And when
right.
more people are involved in the work and we're moving towards a common purpose, you're actually going to come up with more opportunities for intervention. We're going to get crazier ideas. And you're going to involve people that have different backgrounds. And that is how we make progress on our toughest challenges.
Yeah, that's tremendous. And I've also found, and I've been in this situation myself, but I've also seen it with some of our students as I kind of shift the conversation over, Tammy, to you, that when when you are positioned in a model or you hear from those in authority that the belief of this organization, this culture, this school is that leadership is an activity and that anybody can lead, suddenly it becomes very exciting and invigorating, but also absolutely terrifying because you no longer terrifying. Can tap out.
That's right.
You can no longer say, well, that's not my decision to make, because now it's anybody's decision to make. So Tammy, as I come to you, mm-hmm. you've been involved with CAPS from really the very beginning.
The start, yes.
And so I think it would be interesting to hear from you about how kind of your observations or reflections back to that time, trying to develop something like this, and the leadership that was necessary for that, but also your work with students and what you've seen in terms of giving them the chance to be in this kind of a model, their excitement or terror around that, and some of the things that, because I've seen some of your students developing really interesting activities around understanding this kind of framework with leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the start, CAPS has really been based on a teamwork approach. And I'm glad you brought up the leadership versus authority dichotomy, because I kind of see the term leadership, when I hear that, I think of team. Mm-hmm. And when I hear authority, I think individual. Mm. Or solo.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important with our students. I know when we started CAPS, I think that all of the instructors that were a part of that opening of CAPS felt a real kind of not really an ownership, but a part of kind of what was developing, and felt like their opinions mattered, felt like their comments mattered, felt like they had a stake in what was, you know, what this was going to become. And I think that was really integral in how it actually developed to what it is today. And I think that's what's made it so unique and such a great program. As far as the students, I think there are a lot of things that we've done, and I know that I've done in teacher ed, that have helped students kind of see that gap between leadership and authority. And a lot of that has been building confidence in the teams with whom they work. Things like the Indigo Project. I mean, that is priceless. I mean, we've had students kind of figure out their strengths, their skills, et cetera. And we spend a lot of time talking as groups of students saying, you know, what do you bring to the table? You know, what do you bring in? And then here we are faced with what I would call an adaptive challenge, this virtual learning. Yeah. You know, we're all out of our comfort zones, most of us. And we're having to kind of find ways to make order of this. And yet we still have some of those technical challenges, like how do we engage students? You know, how do we keep them? How do we create high quality curriculum and so forth?
How do you take attendance?
How do you take attendance?
Which has become a bigger challenge than you ever would have thought.
Exactly. How do you get students to mute their microphones? Those things that you have to do. But the real adaptive part of that is that we're learning kind of along the way. And I think it's keeping students engaged is, of course, the number one thing, but keeping them engaged in a way that they feel a part of what's going on. And we intentionally, in our last CAPS event, put students in teams where they had similar motivators that were kind of figured out or kind of displayed to them from taking the Indigo assessment. And they all felt that that was a great thing. They all noticed that when they were in their groups working, they all felt, I would say, important. They all felt like they were an integral part of creating a solution to a problem. And that's when it kind of clicked to me that, you know, this is a great thing when we put people together and they know their strengths, and they even commented on those in their final presentations, that they understood that those strengths were what they brought to the table to help out with that. Now, we've done different things. I've had students in the class that actually have done some curricular lessons on the KLC strategies, and they've done some various things. For example, they created a beach ball activity. I know you mentioned that, Corey.
I've never forgotten the beach ball. It was quite a visual, exciting activity.
Where they took a beach ball, basically very simple, took a beach ball and with a magic marker. They wrote some things on there like, how would you handle this situation? What do you believe in this? Where do you see yourself in the future, et cetera. And so in doing that, they would pass the beach ball back and forth. The students, whatever their thumbs landed on, they had to answer that question. Wow. And they had to present that to the class. So just having them feel a part of that. The other thing we've done just to make students feel important and a part of things in our class, campfire activity, where we actually have a carpet in our classroom that looks like a campfire. And the students sit around there and we have prompts and they pull a prompt and they talk through it. Now, that was great in a face-to-face classroom, but as an adaptive challenge, how do we do that when we're virtual, right? Yeah. How do we accomplish some of those same things and allow students to feel that they have a part in this program, that they're a part of this leadership, building that confidence, getting them involved, keeping them engaged. So we had to get really creative. And so going online, finding what we could, found a program where we spin the wheel. And instead of pulling a prompt, they actually would spin the wheel. And whatever the prompt landed on or whatever the wheel landed on, that was the prompt that they had. So just trying to adapt some of those things that we do in a face-to-face environment to create that same sense of worth in a virtual environment has been challenging.
Yeah. So unpacking a few of that, so much that you just shared there that we could spend hours digging into, really good stuff. This idea, and we've just to kind of for our listeners who might not be as familiar with the adaptive leadership model or the KLC framework, the Kansas Leadership Center framework, this idea of adaptive versus technical. Mm-hmm. So adaptive, I've always thought of it, and please chime in with your own thoughts. Mm-hmm. You know, adaptive often involves other people. It's relational. It's messy work, usually. The thing that is a good differentiator for me always is this something where I think I can get fairly quickly to a solution, or is it something where I'm simply trying to make progress? Mm-hmm. And that's when I usually think I'm in an adaptive situation versus technical, which is more of a, I always view a checklist, right? I've got a mm-hmm. checklist. I've got something I can go put on my list and I can, in a reasonable amount of time, actually knock it off my list, right?
Exactly.
Check it off. So these adaptive challenges are things we're running into all the time now mm-hmm. with what we're doing. You also mentioned Indigo Project and the Indigo Education Company. Great partner. We actually had a podcast episode last season with Sherry Smith, their CEO, talking about the self-discovery process for students. And I will tell you, and I've just started digging into some of these final presentations that students did over the course of this 3-day event that you referenced, this mm-hmm. CAPS hack. And I really was impressed with the commentary of the students digesting their own individual assessments and then talking with each other in their teams about what did they see that were common to them and what did that mean for them going forward in their presentation. Really powerful. So hats off and a tip of the cap to all of the instructors and students that worked on putting that project together. I think it's a great building block for us. So with some of these examples, Tammy, that you've shared, you know, what are we noticing with our students? We're a very, we're a profession-based environment, but we're an environment where students are given the flexibility and the freedom to explore and to develop an entrepreneurial mindset. We have more kind of, I guess, liberation in the space. We give students a little more maybe benefit of the doubt. We give them a little more flexibility in their schedule, those kinds of things. What are we noticing when it comes to students embracing leadership as an activity, would you say?
I would say that just the fact that you said that in some of their presentations, what I thought was really good is they kind of they looked at the things about themselves, about each other that were strengths or skills, and they were able to kind of consolidate that and come to a mutual understanding of how those things work together to help them accomplish something. And I believe that's true leadership, mm-hmm. you know, the ability to kind of see how you fit into this particular solution, how you're going to proceed with others around you while recognizing their strengths and skills to accomplish something great. And I think students having the power of that information are unbelievable. I was totally blown away myself, especially a couple of groups that said, here are our strengths, here are my strengths, here are these strengths, but this is what we have in common. And I thought, my gosh, this is a great thing that they're actually recognizing what it is that makes them a successful group and coming up with a successful situation. So I think their ability to, I think they're more aware now with some of the things that we've done of kind of who they are and what they do bring to the table. And I think that's exciting that they have that, not only the passion, but they have the knowledge behind them now. They have that ability to see that. I know I'm very big on getting students out to communicate with other professionals. And I noticed a few years ago, you know, we would do Twitter groups and things like that. And they would be, oh, we're watching or we're following the Twitter of this person we watched on a TED Talk. Or we're looking at this Twitter, this. And so I started saying, why don't you message this person? Why don't you send it out this person? This person is a person just like you. And suddenly they saw themselves in a different light. Mm. They gained that confidence. And I think that confidence is what kind of empowers them to then feel that they are a participant and a valid participant mm. in what they're trying to do together in a team.
It does seem like confidence is the result of some level of pushing your comfort zone. And when I say that term, which is something we hear a lot, DJ, in the Leadership Center model and around your building in Wichita, which is a beautiful facility. It actually reminds us a lot of our facility here at Blue Valley Caps. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me of one of our alum, Chloe Ortbals, who was here and she graduated in, I believe, 2015. She's now finishing pharmacy school at KU and is about to jump into the workforce, which just blows me away that that's happening already. But she presented when we brought the Kansas Leadership Center framework in as a real natural strategic fit for CAPS. Mm-hmm. She presented in front of all of her peer students and she shared this story about working at KU Medical Center in a lab. Very obviously, she was 17 or 18 years old, female. She was in kind of a male-dominated lab where she was, and a lot of folks with degrees and expertise and all the things that intimidate, you know, or can intimidate a person. And she had something that had happened that wasn't expected, that was a negative result. And she was stuck in a position of, do I just like slide out of here and not say anything and just see if anything comes of it? Or do I actually go and kind of report this? And, you know, there was a lot of fear involved in that. But I remember her sharing that she, you know, she did what she thought was right. She shared the information. She got some accolades for that and kind of was seen as someone who exhibited leadership by stepping up. But she also shared with her peer students that it changed her definition of leadership. And she mm-hmm. said, my definition of leadership now is that leadership means you're pushing your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And she said that not knowing that that was a key phrase of the Leadership Center. But anyway, DJ, what do you see when you work with people across the state and across the country around breaking away from this construct of leadership and authority being the same thing?
Yeah.
How do you see it play out? How long does it take for people to break away? What are the remaining struggles? I mean, what's the narrative there?
Well, just to be frank, we live in a time where, you know, we've been told like our problems, somebody else caused them. There's a lot mm-hmm. of conversation about, you know, I see a challenge, but what am I going to do about that? That's not my mess.
Sure.
Leadership as an activity actually takes the idea that if it's not your mess, then you don't have a role to play in making progress in it either. So mm-hmm. I often tell people that if you're part of the mess, you can also be a part of the progress, be a part of the change. And so some of this is owning our own informal authority when we don't have formal authority around these challenges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in relationship to CAPS, just to bring, you know, back in what Dr. Fry was talking about, the beauty is I think you're doing a couple of things. You're helping students understand, and everybody, by the way, how to manage themselves better. Hmm. And so you talked about adaptive challenges a moment ago, Corey. And the best example I've ever heard is from our colleague, Adrian Roberson, who I know has spent time here.
Yeah, and Pastor A,
right?
He's been here a few times.
Yeah, just quick context, quick story to give context. He talks about a mouse running across the floor in his house. And he says, you know, so I scream. He says his wife screamed. I'm pretty sure he screamed. I don't appreciate his.
We'll
gender.
Make sure he yeah, gets a right. copy of this podcast
please,
episode.
Please let send him this sound off. But he goes to you know the depot, gets the mouse trap, problem solved. Next couple nights, another mouse runs across. Clearly a new mouse, right? And so what he discovered is, so he calls in pest control, right? Another. These are technical problems, right? I know what the problem is. I know what the solution is. I know an expert to call. But what he realizes is there's two abandoned houses in his neighborhood And what the pest control people tell them is these are where your problems, and until something's done about these two abandoned homes in your neighborhood, you're going to continue to have these problems, and so is everybody else. Now we've got an adaptive challenge because the solution is no longer clear. It's not just get rid of the one mouse. It's I've got to engage neighbors. Neighbors, by the way, who he hadn't met before. He's like, all of a sudden, I gotta be this outgoing guy. He runs a congregation. He's very
a pastor.
Outgoing.
Come on.
Right. I know, but you know, it's funny how we do in our neighborhoods, right? And so you see how, so one of the ways one of the problems we have is most people treat everything as a technical problem. There's an expert I can call to solve it. Or if with enough authority, I could do something about that one day. One of my least favorite phrases ever is a leader of tomorrow. It's just not true. And if it's in your mission statement somewhere, then I love it. I'm kidding. But we need leadership right now, no matter where people are at, right? Yeah, so right. To get back to your right. original question, yeah. What we run into is one of two things. When we work with international companies, and we work with not small nonprofits out in Western Kansas. And there's no distinction there that's important other than people are experiencing the same things no matter where they're at. And it's either I've got the authority I thought I needed and nothing's changing. I'm playing whack-a-mole here. The same challenges keep popping up. Or I'll do something about it one day when I have that authority. And so what we really start to have people play with is this idea that if they managed themselves better, understood themselves, what you were talking about, Dr. Fry, if they spent more time diagnosing the situation. And I think those are two things we really ignore, understanding ourselves and really taking time to understand the problem, right? Rather than, yeah, we know what the problem is. Let's go. We know it's a mouse in the house. Let's go work on that. When it turns out it's not a mouse in the house, it's all this other stuff. And then beyond that, then we intervene and we energize others to intervene with us. And so those are our kind of four core competencies. But I think people do a pretty good job of thinking, I got to energize others with my authority. And at some point, I got to intervene. And by the way, I have to intervene because I've got the authority. Like, people expect me to do something about this challenge. But what our work has really been, no matter who these organizations are, is to take that step back and say, who hasn't been involved in this work that should be? And quite frankly, usually the unusual voice is somebody who has a big stake in the issue, but very little influence. So for years, education systems have made decisions for students, not with students, right? And I say that in this room because you're doing, I know you're working on that challenge. Companies make decisions for consumers without doing a great job of asking the consumers actually what they need, what they want, right? I worked in youth ministry for a long time, made a lot of decisions with parents about what youth needed, the best things for them without asking youth. And so what we are asking authority figures to do is not give up their authority, but that there are times they need to show up as a stakeholder, admitting they don't know anything more about this problem than some of the other people involved, and being curious about what questions we should ask rather than what answers we should force out or suggest would solve the problem. So that was way longer than you needed.
Oh, no. This is what we. That was a great. That's on. Actually a great way. Using that story is a great way to convey the framework and what this all is and those four key areas that we talk about a lot here. You know, we had some students. Years ago, and this was around the time that Chloe Ortbals was here, we had another student, another alum that's actually re-engaging with us now. She works in Chicago for JP Morgan Chase. But she is actually re-engaging to try and kick up more activity with our alumni. And this process is just now starting, but she had a great comment. We were catching up and I said, we're kind of struggling to understand how we, from a larger program standpoint, how would we provide resources and support and connect with alums and make sure that, and she said, well, why don't I get a committee of alums together? We're the ones that this is for.
Yeah.
Put
the work back on
and
them.
And she's like, yeah, it's like the failure to give the work back in some ways. Mm-hmm. Right. Our other alumni, at the time when they were students, actually went in and had some real curiosity about this leadership center organization and framework and had heard a little bit about this and, hey, what does that mean? I'm interested in learning more. And so I actually got to become, early in my tenure here at CAPS, got to also become a business partner. And I said, why don't I be the client and we'll work together and let's see if we can come up with a way to deploy this. And actually created some custom made posters and cards that like talked about those competencies and did it in a way that it wasn't the adaptive leadership Harvard KLC language so much. It was more the capped student language and tied it back to student projects. Really, really cool. So there's so much to talk about with this. As we think about those four areas, diagnosing the situation, managing self, intervening skillfully, energizing others, Tammy, coming back to you, of those, do you see with our cohort of students any area that they're more inclined to be maybe already doing or good at now versus, man, we really need to work on this one, or this is something that's not natural to them? Is there anything about the demographic or that age cohort that fits in certain areas and not others, or is it personal to the student?
I think it is personal to the student. One thing that I was going to say is that I think that what sometimes is lacking in an education situation is some transparency. And so I'm always transparent with students to say, this isn't working. You know, we need to turn direction here, or what would you suggest I do? And quite honestly, a lot of my great ideas come from students for that reason. I would say the one of those four, Corey, that I see students kind of implementing more than others is the energizing others. I've been very, very happy to see, and especially in the groups on this last project that we did, a lot of them brought up that on their Indigo assessment report, it stated that they were good at kind of supporting others or kind of being cheerleaders for groups in a situation. And I think that that's a really, really important step for them, is that they are kind of coming out of self and looking at what others in the group are bringing to the table and how they can help and being supportive of each other. And so I think I've kind of seen that emerge as a really important aspect of the generation now.
Yeah, well, they certainly have, they have the energy. We know that. Well, it's that connection to
but
others.
But transposing it to someone else, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, and a beautiful example of an authority, you in a situation not showing up as a traditional authority, right? When you're naming, this isn't working, what ideas do we have there?
Right, so, putting others in the role of leadership.
Absolutely. And, and that, to me, that's the work, because it's not giving up authority all the time. Authority is good when done well. Like, I don't want anybody to hear we need less authority, tear the system apart.
Want some anarchy?
Right. No, no, that is not this podcast, I don't think.
Okay. Although, no, I don't think so either.
I think that's in the next room.
It's more of a guiding.
That's right.
Right.
And choosing when to do it. There are times you need to provide authority in that room,
exactly.
Right? You got to keep the students safe.
To provide structure and
that's
some
right.
guidance. Absolutely.
But it's when do I show up strategically to say, you know, I'm going to invite you all into a process you normally don't get invited into. And by the way, what we hear from executives in these large organizations, not surprising, it's lonely at the top. It feels like everything falls on me to make decisions. But when you free them up to say, no, 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 your work is actually at times to energize others and to include others in this mess, that can be freeing. I'm with you though, Dr. Pry. I think students sometimes do this naturally. And if we can give them situations to do that along the way through their education experience, they're going to be so much better off when they hit the workforce, which is why spaces like this one is so important.
You know,
well, and that's something I was thinking with the Twitter chats that I mentioned earlier. I think it's really important to have students know that they have a voice, even with these professionals that they see as, quote, leaders.
Yes.
But that it is more of a community of practitioners that they can be a part of, even though they're students and they don't feel important, that they have things to say. And one of the most exciting things that happens is when someone returns a message to them and they're just like, oh my gosh, you know, this person that I saw at a TED Talk just sent me a message. I said, of course, they're people just like you. You're working toward a common goal, and they start to see themselves in a new role.
Hmm. Wow, that's really well said. I have to be honest. Ever since DJ said it's lonely at the top, I've had running through my head, it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll by AC/DC.
Also, both
and this is going to be
true.
An earwig.
Okay,
this thing's going to be going
it,
the rest of the day. So we better wrap up before I start singing. But no, this is what a fantastic conversation. I'm also, it strikes me as we think about the work that we do as the practitioners, whether it's, you know, Dr. Fry in the classroom, or it's, you know, DJ and others like you that are strategic partners of CAPS, or it's me in an administrative role. You know, there are all these players that are a part of this, and it tends to be the people that are really energized by this kind of work and this kind of model. They tend to be action oriented. And I'm only going to speak for myself now, but I think it applies to a lot of our folks, our peers that are out there. And being action oriented, I found for me, the diagnosing the situation piece can be really tough, because it feels like you're slowing down. You're really slowing down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you see opportunity, man, you just want to jump on it. And of course, combine that with the fact that on the Enneagram, I'm an enthusiast. So I get excited about the action orientation.
Yeah.
Now we've really got a problem, because we're going 100 miles an hour.
We know, Corey, one of the things that we like to do with, I know we were talking about the Indigo assessment earlier. One of the things that I think the students really enjoy is we look at the results where it shows that their adaptive style and their natural style.
Right, right.
And we have that discussion of, okay, here's your natural style. But when you're working with others, how do you adapt?
Yeah.
You know, and why do you adapt? And why is that important? Is it important because you're now part of a larger group and you have to give and take?
Yeah. And just to give a little more context before we wrap on the Indigo. So this, we've mentioned this a number of times, Indigo Education Company and the Indigo Project, as they're known by most people. You know, this is an assessment that then comes with some additional support that comes afterwards. But it's based on Target Training International, corporate training, DISC profile, motivators, kind of gives each student or teacher that takes this assessment a report, almost like you're reading it to yourself, right? Corey does this, Corey does that, Tammy does this, Tammy does that. But it's so interesting, almost spooky how
close it
can be to who you are. And then, you know, it's the whole knowledge is power, right?
Right.
If we know who we are, we've used the phrase before, know thyself, deploy thyself, right? You got to know who you are before you can go out and actually deploy to make impact on the world. But a great group out of Colorado, Indigo Project, you can Google them. I'm sure they'd be happy to hear from you if you have any interest. And Kansas Leadership Center, DJ, before I forget, KansasLeadershipCenter.org.
Correct.
And DJ's here in the Kansas City area, but certainly reach out to us or directly to them off their website, and I'm sure they'd be happy to help as well. So final question for each of you as we wrap. And this is something we ask all our guests in the first season. And I think we had enough interest in this that we're going to keep it going for the second season. But it's this idea of, you know, moonshot thinking. Like, how do we take things and go not just 10% better, but 10x better? Like, what's the big, hairy, audacious, you know, goal or dream that we have? Breaking away from just efficiencies, right, and improvements, to like thinking much different about the world. So if I were to ask each of you as a final question, you know, what is your moonshot right now? What would your answer be?
You want a rock, paper, scissors?
I'm looking at them like, who gets to go first?
Throw an airplane, who catches? I'll start. I would say that my looking ahead probably involves, you know, I work with students that, at least for now, are planning to work with other students in a classroom. And I would say that my kind of goal looking ahead is to create future educators who want to empower their students in a way that they see themselves having that place in the world, like we were talking earlier. For whatever reason, I think that we have a lot of students that are high achievers, that are energized, like you said, Corey, that kind of come to the surface. And I think there are a lot of students that are missed. And I know Sir Ken Robinson said that, you know, if you're not willing to change, then you're never, I mean, if you're not willing to change, you're never going to be creative in anything. You're not going to have anything happen of value. And I think that we need to look at changes. We need to look at changing it so that we incorporate more students into that empowering process and get them to see themselves as confident and engaging partners in the world.
That's fantastic. And that teacher ed piece is so important. I mean, how we train and position our future teachers. What a huge adaptive challenge that is right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
DJ, how about you?
That's beautiful. And, you know, for me right now, it's anchored to my initiative work with Inside Kansas City. And just to give some very quick context, our board at the Kansas Leadership Center is very serious about connecting health metrics in counties, in cities, to leadership impact, that we ought to see healthier counties and cities existing. And so one of the reasons I have a job and get to work with you all and do exciting things is because we have this really interesting situation and, quite frankly, sad situation where the healthiest county in the state, we're sitting in it right now, is Johnson County, Kansas, and it shares a border with Wyandotte County, which yearly is in the bottom three least healthiest counties in the state by all the metrics. And our board is asking the question, how can that be? And I think that's a really important question to ask. So my big hairy, moonshot here is that we would actually see improvements in this area around some more equitable access to some of those health indicators. And the neat part is we could see that as a technical challenge that is Wyandotte County's problem. And, if we can just help them and show up as some sort of savior, KLC will be doing its role. We don't see it like that. Right now, we're in the stage of building partnerships, and those partnerships exist all over Kansas City, not just in Wyandotte County. So if you're out somewhere else in the world, these are the kind of questions we ask as the Leadership Center. We'd love to work with, other partners on that. Most of it comes back to our mission, and we're able to do free of charge in a lot of ways, and other work we do. Paid work so that we can help, organizations make progress. And that goes back into our work inside this state and this region. So that's my big goal that I'm a part of right now. And it's going to involve a lot of other people. And it involves things like you're talking about, Dr. Fry, changing some of these standard systems and just asking better questions. I don't know what the strategies look like, but if we ask better questions, we'll see some shifts in the systems that we all aspire to.
That's fantastic. And that idea of asking good questions is maybe the most quickly introduced piece of these competencies and this concept of the Leadership Center when it comes to making immediate impact. And what I mean by that is we've had situations where, we typically would have a student come in, have a conversation with us, maybe something isn't working for them. And instead of it being what would feel like a more traditional visit to the office, so to speak, in a high school, it becomes a visit with the old KLC guide with the probing questions. And we just sit down and it's almost like a coaching session.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting how those conversations change based on how you approach them. So that's really good. You've also given us a new cool band name, Big Hairy Moonshot.
I know. I combined two metaphors there. I was hoping nobody knows. But now that you're going
to
name it.
Coming to your Tuesday taco night,
Good try.
Big Hairy Moonshot. DJ, Tammy, thank
I'll
you
never
so
be
much.
Invited back. I see how this goes.
Thank you.
On the contrary, these are the kinds of exciting elements of our podcasts that keep people coming back. I'm saying that's just the stuff I'm interested in. I don't know
that's
if anybody
that matters,
else is,
but that's right.
We always have to laugh, but man, what a great conversation. Thank you to you both, not only for being on the show today, but just your continued work and trying to make the world a better place. And Tammy, thank you for all your contributions to CAPS. And I know that you have been integral as we built out this national network in building that kind of connection with other teachers, and the fact that I think you just came from a conversation with other teacher education instructors in CAPS just shows that, that ability to exhibit leadership all throughout the network is just incredibly powerful, and why it's KLC such a great fit for what we're trying to do. So thank you to you both. Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of The Network. We want you to keep getting after it. We know that this is a very interesting time in our world. There are a lot of adaptive challenges out there that we're all facing. But know this, what you do matters, how it impacts students. It matters on the lives of those students. There are ways in which you can be effective in connecting with them and bringing profession-based learning to them. It just takes all those elements of creativity that you all have to make it what it is and to actualize it. And we know you've got it in you. The tipping point in education is near. You all are making it happen. We're getting closer and closer every day. And so keep at it, keep on going. And until next time, get after it, and we will talk to you soon.